Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw Countout, the premier top 10 wrestling countdown show where we take a look at all sorts of wrestling stuff and count it down.
Correct.
Yes, that's right. Right here at youtube.com/ Steve Larson. We're also now available in podcast form. Wherever fine podcasts are available. And if you hit that subscribe download button, that helps us out a lot. It gets us up in there in the iTunes Sports Rec category. We want top 150.
Yep.
Makes me very happy. And of course, we've got a Patreon where you can support the show at patreon.com/ Steven Larson. And we also have now pro wrestling tees. We've got official t-shirts there at prowrestlingtees.com/.
This isn't a Going In Raw t-shirt, but it was purchased from Pro Wrestling
Tees. As was my Bruiser Brody shirt. These are pro wrestling. I ordered a ton. Are those?
That's a much, much better shirt than what I have.
Well, that's a punishment shirt, buddy boy. I ordered a bunch of the Going In Raw shirts.
Yeah.
Including one for you.
I could have bought my own shirt. I mean, I appreciate it.
But. I know you could have, but sometimes you're like slow on that stuff. You're like, I have too much stuff to get on the website.
I do. I have a whole lot of stuff.
So I got you covered.
Thank you.
Anyways, so a couple weeks ago, we love talking about WCW.
Yes.
And in one of our shows, I forget which one it was, I sort of off the top of my head said, because I do that off the, everything I say is off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I say, we should do a top 10 reasons WCW failed. And then a bunch of our comments in the YouTubes, smash that like button, said, you guys should do that. Top 10 reasons WCW failed.
So I guess what we're going to do today.
Top 10 reasons WCW failed right here at Going In Raw Countout.
Yes.
Let me get my drink first. Number 10.
10.
The WWF.
Yeah, that was WCW's competition.
Let's face it. The WWF during that period of time, and you know, I know there's sort of a symbiotic relationship between these two companies. They were making each other up their game.
Yes.
But the WWF did a hell of a job upping their game. They ushered in the Attitude Era.
They put the belt on Stone Cold, made him the top star in the entire industry.
The amount of talent in the WWF was ungodly.
Yes.
You've got Stone Cold, Rock, Mankind, Undertaker,
and not
Kane.
Just the talent, just the
development of that talent.
Yeah, the development of that talent, and then how creative used that talent.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, there was creative missteps.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of them during the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
But they made huge stars out of Stone Cold, out of The Rock, out of Mankind, out of Triple H.
Out of people, also, though, out of people that the WCW had fired. Like you said, Triple H, Mick Foley, Edge, Steve Austin, and the WWF eventually, because they were doing so good, they eventually brought people over from WCW. They were able to steal people away because they saw, man, they can make huge stars out of these guys.
Yep. They brought over Dean Malenko, Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit. Chris Jericho.
Big Show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All those X-Pac. Wrestlers. Well, kind of. All those wrestlers defected from WCW to the WWF during the Monday Night Wars.
That's right.
And it really swung the balance of power to the WWF.
And the WWF was also, they were, I'm going to use this word, innovative. In that, so the I think that the one thing that WCW did well was bring in talents for their cruiserweight division.
Yes.
That was one thing that was like, wow, you guys did that really well. That was really, really good thinking, Eric Bischoff.
Yeah.
The WWF did things like they really understood what ECW was doing and went in that kind of direction to the extent that they could while they had such a good balance of bringing in the sort of ECW influence but maintaining a relatively, for the time, mainstream approach to things.
Yeah, and they retained their top-notch production values
right,
as well.
Right, exactly, yeah. So they had, for example, the Hardcore title, and then WCW gets their own Hardcore title. The WWF's had that 24/7 rule, and I don't know if the WCW did that as well, but it was just the WWF... Thanks to Vince McMahon, thanks to Vince Russo, and we give him a lot of shit, but thanks to Vince Russo, they had this method of storytelling that the WCW then had to try to play catch up with, And also because their standards and practices were a lot more heavy-handed, evidently, than WWF's.
Yeah.
They couldn't really keep up.
Nope.
So that's number 10. Number nine.
Nine.
You had the inmates running the asylum at WCW.
This is kind of all you really need to know.
Mm-hmm.
When Eric Bischoff fired X-Pac, Nash and Hall locked him in a closet.
Yep.
Can you imagine anybody locking Vince McMahon in a closet?
No way. He would literally murder you. Literally. And everybody knows that.
Yep.
They had no singular vision there.
Nope.
That's not one of our actual things. Okay, it's not. Okay, this is the one that's no singular vision. You had Kevin Sullivan, Kevin Nash. You had any number of people who were in charge. Nobody was really in charge.
Well, Dusty.
Dusty Rhodes was in charge.
And then Hogan had his own creative control clause.
Yeah, yeah. So you had all this stuff happening. Nobody was really in control. Like, there were plenty of people writing checks. Nobody was actually in control. There was no singular vision. They just would make it up basically as they went along.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that you would hear about WCW is that so often people would get to the show and there was no plan in place. Going into the show, there was no plan in place.
Yeah.
Another aspect of the booking, though, is that they were so obsessed with TV ratings that they would give away pay-per-view level. Like, instead of building Goldberg Hogan over the span of 3 months
and
then having, like, a huge blow-off where Goldberg would win the title, it was just announced, Goldberg versus Hogan tonight.
Yeah.
And
granted, they wanted to pop ratings,
And granted, that show was really good, and that show got a lot of ratings, and the crowd was super hot. But that was a huge money match.
Well, but here's the something to consider, too, is when they spent a year and a half building up Sting. And when he finally had his match against Hogan, Hogan, up until I think the show started, was backstage still negotiating a way where he could win.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, the whole storyline is built up for Sting to take the belt off Hogan. That has to be your finish.
Right.
It has to be.
Right. Right.
And so I guess what they worked out was Hogan would beat Sting, but Bret Hart came out and said, no, referee, you counted too fast.
Yeah.
Restarted the match and Sting won.
Yeah. And the next night, they took it off of Sting.
Yeah.
Because they said that was illegal.
It was...
Yeah. This is interesting, though. You got also Kevin Sullivan, who was cited by Malenko, Perry Saturn, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, and a few others. And they all cited him as a reason for keeping them down, basically.
Yeah.
Because there was that for young talent, there was that glass ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah,
all the top stars in WCW really
everybody
had
was
carte
out,
blanche for the most part.
Everybody was out for themselves.
Yeah.
That's the point. Which leads into number eight.
Eight.
The Warrior. So this is totally indicative of Hulk Hogan basically being a massive reason why WCW went under, because Hulk Hogan had full creative control over his character. And he brought in the Warrior.
Yeah, I'd say save some of this Hulk Hogan material because we got to talk about him more later.
Is there a Hulk Hogan entry?
Yeah.
Okay. So they brought in a fellow named Richard Williams, and he was the Renegade, and he was supposed to be a Warrior knockoff. And they would, from time to time, like when they were talking about the Renegade, like when they were building up for the debut of the Renegade, they made it sound like the Warrior was coming in. They made no bones about it. And then it was this dude.
This is interesting.
Hmm.
According to Scoops, the Renegades' push didn't go well, but they still pushed him to win the TV title from Arn Anderson.
Yeah.
But not even that helped.
Yeah.
But then when he was let go from WCW, he got really depressed and shot himself.
It's not good. Not good at all. Let's see here. Just as they did with Roddy Piper, WCW attempted to use an old WWF feud, like one of the biggest. Like, Warrior taking the title off of Hogan was like one of the biggest moments in the modern era of pro wrestling at the time.
And it seemed like, effectively, that Hogan wanted to bring the Warrior in to get that loss back.
Yeah, and the match was horrible. We had it on our top 10 worst...
It was on some worst match.
Worst list. Rematches.
Yes.
It was in the worst rematch. It was number one. It was so bad, and it was... Hogan didn't want to let anybody else do what he didn't want to do.
Yep.
And Warrior was too big of an ego. So you had this horrible, horrible match. And that match went long because of how much of a clusterfuck it was.
And pushed the title match off the card.
Well, half off the card. I think it got interrupted halfway through, so people didn't see the finish. I think that's what happened. I think that match started.
Regardless, WCW had to refund a bunch of people's money for not giving them a complete pay-per-view.
Yeah. Yeah.
All due to...
And that way it was a lot of money. It was like millions of dollars.
Yeah, Hogan Warrior. Money. Yeah.
Warrior was paid a lot. And this is another, you know, they would open up their checkbook big time. Get out your checkbook.
Yep.
And the Warrior was paid. The rumor is $1 million up front and then a bonus. Scoop's notes here says, but his jacket might be the best thing he did.
Remember the One Warrior Nation?
The One Warrior Nation with the Disciple, Brutus, yeah. the Barber, yeah. Beefcake. Let's see here. Going through the match. We've talked about the match and that other thing.
Yeah.
Bischoff
said that match stuck up the joint.
Yeah. Did it actually push? Hold on. Now I want to see this. Oh, okay. No. Yeah. In many areas, the pay-per-view was cut off after this match. So, I guess you're right. I guess if you build that as your main event and you don't run it, you got to give out. You got to dole out refunds.
Yep.
So, yeah, I guess so.
That wasn't like matches canceled before the show. It's like, oh, we're out of time. Robin Hood's on next.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it's like, you know, this was 1998. And if you flip over, you get Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock. This is a month before Survivor Series 98, like one of the best pay-per-views ever.
Yep.
Immaculate booking versus this crap. And Hogan did it all just for himself.
Yep.
Number seven.
Seven.
Goldberg's streak.
Or more so how it ended.
How it ended. They had the one thing that WCW did do right was Bill Goldberg.
Yes.
And you can see that to this day. He is still a huge draw.
Yes.
In the WWE's most over babyface. And they did it so well that can be the case.
Yeah.
So they built up Goldberg sort of on the undercard as this monster who would just chew through people.
Yeah.
And he built up this fan base and fans started in Goldberg.
Yeah.
They'd be chanting Goldberg, and it got so huge. He eventually won the U.S. title. He took the big gold belt off Hogan.
Yep.
And he was huge.
Yep.
And so you'd think that they would book him in some other big feud, maybe continue the Hogan feud, maybe just keep on going, maybe hold that title for 2 years. They could have built such a massive, massive thing with this to really drive ratings. And instead, what did they do?
Well, Hogan never gave him a rematch.
Yep. Did it say why?
No.
No?
Probably because Hogan didn't want to lose to him again. According to Scoops, he was not in the main events of most of the following pay-per-views, although he was in the Halloween Havoc, but then again, it never aired. His match never aired. I remember watching this match when Goldberg lost.
Mm-hmm.
Goldberg was never great in the ring, nor was Kevin Nash.
Right, right, right.
But then, you know, Scott Hall comes out with a taser. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash were having issues.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't best buddies anymore.
Right.
So it was confusing is why is Scott Hall coming out to help Nash when they're not friendly right now?
Right.
So he tases Goldberg.
Yeah.
Nash power bombs him. At this point, granted, Kevin Nash, huge babyface.
Yeah.
He and the Wolfpack were super over.
Super over, yeah.
Super over.
Yeah.
So if anybody at that time was going to beat Goldberg, mm-hmm. I guess Nash made a certain amount of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Although, yeah. but anyways.
There are a million other ways they could have done it.
Yes, it didn't really make a whole ton of sense, but it happened.
Yeah. So then shortly after Nash wins the title off of Goldberg, we get to number six.
Six.
The finger poke of doom. So we talked about this again last week on, which one did we do last
week?
We've
talked about it several times.
We've talked about the finger poke of doom several times.
It was in the worst title matches episode.
Probably.
No, it was.
Oh, it was? Okay.
I think it was number one.
All right. So anyways, this was.
Worst heel turns.
This was Kevin Nash. As a babyface champion, Hulk Hogan had retired, but he was coming back, and they were going to face off because Bill Goldberg was falsely accused of stalking Miss Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Just saying it, I'm like, this is just crap. This is just crap.
So Goldberg is taken into police custody,
mm-hmm.
and therefore can't have his match with Kevin Nash. This is a huge Nitro at the Georgia Dome.
Right, right, right. Right.
And so Nash offers the rematch to Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan had recently retired, but came back for the show. He was dressed in business attire, but with, I think as you said last week, a form-fitting club t-shirt, but he had slacks and dress shoes.
Yeah.
At this point, two factions of the NWO. Mm-hmm. Wolfpack, as we said in the previous entry.
Super over. I love the Wolfpack.
Yeah, I did too.
They had a great theme song.
They did.
Yeah.
And then you had NWO Hollywood.
NWO Hollywood is what it was called. The Black and White, led by Scott Steiner.
Yeah.
There's nothing finer than Scott Steiner, you fat bastard.
So we talked about this match plenty.
Yeah.
But what always fascinated me about this match was you hear Nash talk about the booking decision. Well, at this time, depending on what you read and who you believe, Nash wasn't the head booker, but he was on the booking committee.
Right.
Was the plan going forward after this match?
Mm-hmm.
Goldberg lost the belt to Nash. Nash would drop the belt to Hogan. NWO would reform and be, in theory, stronger than ever. So Goldberg would have a serious rival to contend with going forward.
Yeah.
Problem was, shortly after this, Goldberg got injured, ripped some tendons in his wrist, punching through
car
a
window.
Yeah. So we'll never know if Nash's plan would ever had ever would have ever come
would
to
the,
fruition.
Would that have culminated in a big Goldberg versus NWO storyline, leading to Goldberg winning the belt back in spectacular fashion?
Yes.
Yeah.
But he'd already kind of done that already, Goldberg.
I know.
He beat Hogan for the belt about
You remember,
a few months prior.
That pay-per-view, or I'm sorry, that episode of Nitro, when he beat, when Goldberg beat Hogan for the belt, he had to go through Scott Hall first.
Yeah.
Like, he was fighting the NWO then.
Yeah.
It
almost seemed like they realized, okay, we gave away a huge money match for free on TV, so we have to, like, go back and rebook that whole storyline how we probably should have done it to begin with.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it seemed like.
Yeah, and you can tell the thing is this was one of the probably the first real step in the like fans really being turned off.
Yes,
by the
I remember watching it and thinking, what the hell is this?
If you look at the fans in the crowd when the actual match, Hogan comes in there wearing his dress slacks and his club shirt. Nash he pokes Nash in the chest. Nash does this really goofy back bump.
Yeah.
And Hogan pins him and they all celebrate. And you just see the people in the crowd, they're like, I paid for this shit. Why am I sitting here for this? This is crap. Like they're all happy and preening in the ring, and I'm just sitting here, I'm like, man, I want to see Hulk Hogan versus Kevin Nash. That would have been kind of, even though neither of these guys can really are known for their wrestling skills, it's still an epic encounter.
Exactly.
You know? So it was just a big middle finger to the fans, you know? And it's like that same night, Mankind was winning the world title.
Yep.
And it was, the fans were just fever hot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyways, as you said, the NWO, that was supposed to be the big thing. So we'll talk about number five.
Five.
The NWO. Now, the NWO was also one of the reasons WCW, they brought WCW to the ratings dance, to the Monday Night War dance.
Yeah. That storyline, when it started, was fresh.
Super fresh.
Innovative.
Yeah.
Revolutionary.
It was cool.
It made WCW, which, historically speaking, hasn't necessarily been cool. Well, pro wrestling, a lot of times, haven't been cool.
They have
cool.
RoboCop.
I know. Yeah. And the Shockmaster.
Yeah.
And the NWO made, and also consider this time, in the early mid-90s, pro wrestling was struggling.
Oh, yeah, big time.
It was full of really over-the-top characters.
Yeah.
And in the NWO, which is, in terms of characters, were grounded.
And that was the thing that Nash and Hall, and specifically Nash, because it really always seemed like it was his idea to do that. And to an extent, I think Eric Bischoff takes some credit for this. But the idea of coming in and not being over the top, like you said, grounded.
Yeah.
Being themselves. And one of the unintended but welcome side effects of not being able to say, I'm Diesel, I'm Razor Ramon, was, oh, well, you're Kevin Nash, you're Scott Hall. That's one thing that Eric Bischoff said, and I think his Legends of JBL thing. And I think Nash has said it before, is these are the real people.
Yep.
This is them. This isn't a character. This is a real people. And so they're coming over here, and all of a sudden you're introducing, people know that it's fake, but when you open the curtain a little bit, they're interested. You know?
And they would do that. They would break kayfabe a little bit when Hall and Nash first showed up. They weren't coming through the entrance ramp.
Right, exactly.
They were coming out of the crowd.
Yeah.
And you juxtapose that with what WWF was doing at the time.
Yeah.
When they thought, okay, we'll just recast new wrestlers as Razor Ramon and Diesel.
Right, exactly. Then the problem was
they
just couldn't get enough of the NWO. And they thought that if everything had to be NWO, and that doesn't work that way.
No, so soon there was, a dozen people in the NWO?
Everybody started joining the NWO.
NWO had their own referee.
They had their own referee. They had their own pay-per-view. And there was, at a certain point, when they were like, well, we wanted the NWO at one point to be its own brand, to be completely its own brand, which would have been interesting if they really went that direction with it. But evidently somebody didn't want to pull the trigger on it being its completely own brand. And so at that point, even like Chris Jericho said, even in the locker room, like if you weren't part of the NWO, then you knew you weren't going to get pushed.
Mm-hmm.
Like they weren't thinking, there was no singing. And this goes back to our other entry. There was no singular vision thinking, okay, well, let's have this number of people in the NWO and these guys are going to fight them. And granted, DDP was the first guy to pin like Hall and Nash or get the best of them. And because he was there as Scott, and he was our guy, but yeah. Also we felt he was the guy at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you had people like Sting, you had Flair and the Horsemen, but then they like destroyed the Horsemen. Like the NWO is just like this overwhelming force. And it's like, well, you have nobody else to fight them.
Yeah.
Nobody's, you know, it's not realistic, but nobody else is going to fight these guys. And so it just turned into NWO versus NWO, because then you have, like you said, you know, the Wolfpack and then Hollywood. You have stuff like the LWO, NWO 2000, which I think was when Bret Hart, Jeff Jarrett got involved.
Yeah.
And it's like at a certain point, they kept on trying to reboot the NWO. And it's like, no, that first group, like those first three were really cool.
Yeah.
And then even when you start turning into a gang, it's like, oh, this is scary.
Yeah.
But then when more people are NWO than WCW, it's like, well, who are they fighting?
Yeah.
Like, what's the
problem? So they had to start fighting each other.
The NWO essentially won.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I know.
And that was the problem. There was no conflict.
Yeah. To create conflict, they had to split up the NWO.
Right. Exactly.
Only for a few months later to have them join up again.
Yeah.
It just...
Even Scoop says here in the notes that Jericho talks about how you could be having a great match and it'd be overshadowed by a New World Order talk. So, you know, it's like you can be, or even have a great match. Like I remember seeing this, you know, you have a couple guys not affiliated with NWO having a good match and the NWO would like hop in there and take over and then their angles.
Even during the match, the commentators would talk about the NWO.
Yeah, that happened a lot. Like you go back and watch those old Nitros. They can't stop talking about it when something else is going on in the ring. So, yeah, but, you know, the success of the group, says here in the notes, and this is true, create a lot of other stables to try to duplicate the success, and, you know, that's what sort of the dawn of the stable.
Yeah.
You know, because the NWO is doing their thing, then DX debuted over on WWF, so, like, the era of the stable kind of took over, Nation of Domination were around. So, but the NWO, in the end, instead of being used effectively, they just... You know, they went to that well way too many times.
Yeah, I mean, they expanded too quickly, to too many people, watered down the whole premise. And as you said, they had, by that point, when there's 12, 15 people in the NWO, there's no real competition, so they had to split up the group, which further kind of watered down not only the property, but just, I don't know, it got overly messy and complicated for no reason.
Yeah.
Just keep it the first five or six.
Yeah.
Because it was Hall, Nash, Hogan, then it was DiBiase, the Giant.
And then X-Pac.
The next Pac.
Yeah.
They kept it those
and five. That's good.
Five or six people. That's that could have been great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But of course, the, I guess, leader of the NWO, you can consider him, Hulk Hogan, number four. Hulk Hogan, brother. So, of course, this was a, you know, to his credit, I mean, look, if you're Hulk Hogan. Regardless, I mean, you know, you might have sank WCW, but you made out okay because when he came back to WWE, I said this before, when he came back to WWE, he was hailed as a hero. He won the world title again. You know, he's probably going to be back for WrestleMania, assuming he does the little apology tour thing. But he was one of the main reasons. His creative control card that he played, burying the hell out of people.
Yep.
And it was all just to keep his spot. And he was so... He could have. Hogan was always that monster who could have been used to get so many other people over, and instead he would be booked into celebrity feuds with like Jay Leno and Carl Malone, and it was just weird. He would like when Jay Leno has you in like a submission hold, it doesn't look good for wrestling because you're Hulk Hogan. You're like the monster of wrestling.
And going back to that Sting match. I mean, that kind of epitomizes Hogan's creative control kind of attitude where, I mean, this is a story that WCW has invested a lot of time and money in, building it up to this blow-off match, this finish that has to happen for this story to feel satisfying in any way.
Yeah.
And up to the last minute, Hogan is still trying to negotiate a finish that makes, at the least, makes himself look strong.
Yeah, exactly.
And their rematch at Super Brawl, I think, Hogan was beating the crap out of Sting for 15 minutes.
I'm the man.
Until Macho Man effectively won the match for Sting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm the man.
I like this note here. He avoided doing the honors and rematches for people like Goldberg and often changed clean endings to keep himself looking strong.
Imagine if he had been more willing to put people over.
Mm-hmm.
Develop storylines with younger talent. Bring them, the younger talent, up to his level. There's so many more people he could have matches with and made more money with.
You know what's funny?
It's
is
like
that
he only wanted to have matches with the same handful of people.
It's sad, too, because it's often understood that Eric Bischoff really had his ear.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's because Bischoff was such a yes man, or if Bischoff could have, I don't want to say manipulated, but made Hogan understand, hey, if the company succeeds,
we all succeed.
Yeah. And exactly, specifically Hogan succeeds.
Yeah.
And let's chart a path where we can build up all these people along with you.
Yeah.
You know? And instead it was like Bischoff just sort of went along with it. And
I know.
To this day seemed like, even when they were in TNA a couple of years ago, he was still like just his yes man. And because Hogan was known for politicking backstage.
Well, did you hear the first thing or what Hogan said after Kevin Owens won the belt? This is what Hogan said. Owens better get real good at backstage politics. It's like, dude, it's a completely different era,
it's
man.
It's such a different era now.
It's so different.
Oh, man, it's so great. But yeah, I mean, that was just... And then you have... we're going to talk him at number two. But we'll get to that in a second. We'll go with number three. David Arquette winning the WCW title.
Yeah, we've talked about this match extensively as well.
Plenty of times. It's funny how WCW and WWF completely, like, there's such a staunch difference between WWF. Like, the one time that a celebrity, I mean, there's been multiple times, but, like, the one time where a celebrity went up against an actual WWF guy was Lawrence Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Took on Bam Bam Bigelow.
Mm-hmm.
And Lawrence Taylor is, I think he's a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
He?
Okay.
He's one of the greatest defensive players.
To ever play football. He's an elite athlete.
Elite athlete. Thank you. And so for him to hold his own against Bam Bam Bigelow, whose storyline probably taking him softly, and maybe they justify that way. I don't watch it. But I watched highlights from that match, and Lawrence Taylor was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing. Jay Leno showing up in a t-shirt and sweatpants.
I know.
Was not the way you go about injecting celebrities. Look at like WrestleMania 10. We had to watch that the other day for one of the shows. And they had Burt Reynolds be like the guest ring announcer. He had Rhonda Shear ring girl or something like that.
The following year, WrestleMania 11, Jenny McCarthy and Pam Anderson.
By and large,
WWF would have celebrities involved in their shows, but they wouldn't be involved in the matches.
They would be there to enhance to make a big spectacle of the product, and then they left the in-ring stuff to the in-ring performers.
The one exception, or apart from Lawrence Taylor I can think of, is Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
Because he was involved in the finish of the HBK Austin title match.
I know, but it's Mike freaking
Tyson. No, I know. I'm using an example of how it was done well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And even LT was done, elite athlete. But otherwise, it was all just window dressing for the performances of the athletes, the actual wrestlers.
Yep.
Whereas, here we go. Dennis Rodman, Karl Malone, Master P's, No Limit Soldiers.
Also, Insane Clown Posse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here we go. I didn't know this stat here from Scoop's Notes. In the year 2000, WCW with the belt changed 19 times. And the title was vacated six times.
In 1 year.
Yeah. So David Arquette, Vince Russo, who we're going to talk about in a bit, came into WCW in 1999.
Yeah.
And Vince Russo was all about...
He was popping mainstream headlines. That's what he was about.
Yes, exactly. And there was a movie, Ready to Rumble, which was involved the WCW as a promotion in terms of like part of the storyline. And to help promote that show, 3 weeks after its release, they bring in
that will always be the funniest part of this to me.
David Arquette.
I like that someone on our Twitter posted that from Box Office Mojo or something like that.
He bumped the revenue up 100,000. Like, because the week after he lost the title, there was a bump in the box office for that movie for $100,000.
It was after he lost it?
After he lost. Well, it was like, I want to say it was like 10 days after, maybe it was like a week after he won it. It was in the window, but I think it was either right before or right after he lost it. There was a bump.
So okay, because like, I kind of briefly looked at the still that mm-hmm. person sent, and I thought the week he won, mm-hmm. there was like a massive dip.
Well, I think the dip was normal, but by the end of his run, there was a short bump up.
Okay.
There was a tick up of about $100,000, and I'm pretty sure the idea is that was attributed to him just being in the news of WCW. That kind of makes sense. So I mean, there could be something about him winning it. WCW fans getting pissed and deciding not to watch the movie again, and then when he loses it, they're happy with WCW. I have no idea. I don't know.
Like everybody's boycotting that movie until they got the belt off.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. but anyways, he ended up winning the title on an episode of Thunder. He had it for 12 days, and it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. And Vince Russo's. And the next day he was on the cover of USA Today in like a little tiny blurb. And
well, he says that, but then he says Tony Schiavone came up with the idea of him winning.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So I don't know. It was just, again, fans, like,
why they feel like they're being shit on again.
Like, this is 1990, this is mid-99. Is that what this was?
No, I think it was 2000, wasn't it?
Oh, was it 2000? Mid-2000?
Because Russo came over late 99, I think.
Okay, yeah, 2000, you're right.
Speaking of Russo, do you want to move on to Vince Russo
number
now?
Number two, Vince Russo! So it says here, according to the Scoop's notes, after an argument with Vince McMahon about not having enough time with his family, Russo quit and took the job at WCW, attempting to recreate his Crash TV style that was successful in WWF over there. He answered to no one, apparently, so when they did have somebody with singular vision, it was Vince Russo.
This is great. When Russo was asked why he booked himself as champion, he simply stated it was just another week of television.
You have to appreciate his candor. He had, like, no respect for, like, the legacy of wrestling. Like, fans care about that shit.
Yeah.
They care about that shit. So anyways, WCW brings in Vince Russo as head writer, and I remember a lot of this happening because I was watching WCW sort of off and on at this point
too.
Because WWF was so much better.
And WCW at this point, even before they brought Russo in, was starting to get really bad.
It was starting to get really, really bad. But I was like, you know what? I'll give this a try. I remember giving it a shot, mm-hmm. but it just ended up being a clusterfuck again. So according to Scoop's notes here, Russo got a call from Bret Hart and Jeff Jarrett, and they both had belts. One had WCW, the world title and the U.S. title. And they both said they were injured and couldn't wrestle and they had to give other titles. So Vince Russo then sat down with the booking committee and decided that Tank Abbott was the guy.
Well, they
considered it.
I remember Tank Abbott being in WCW back then, but he wasn't on a lot.
Yeah. At one point, he was like hanging out with Three Count, the boy band group featuring Hurricane Helms.
Yeah.
But anyways, apparently, after that meeting where he was pitching his crap ideas, he was removed from his position as head writer and told to start working on something else. He declined the offer and left. 3 months later, Russo's replacement, Kevin Sullivan was relieved of his duties, and Russo was reinstated as booker alongside Bischoff as a creative director, which was a mess because Bischoff talked about this on Legends of JBL, and it was like he was creative director, Russo was head writer. Nobody was each other's boss. They didn't have... they had to just work together. So those were just titles. It was just, no, you two are in a room together. You guys are going to do this.
Yeah.
And so it was just an absolute mess. And this I thought was actually kind of interesting. It says their first call of business was to strip all champions of their titles and start from scratch with a series of tournaments to declare new champions. And this was the New Blood versus the Millionaires Club feud to give the younger talents a chance to shine, which I thought was a cool idea because I've never seen anybody come in and just say, we're rebooting everything.
Yeah,
all the championships are done. And then you have like, you have the opportunity to bring these new guys in. Like you had like Billy Kidman. Mm-hmm. They had him feud with Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Hogan jobbed to him.
Hogan jobbed him, which again showed, hey, you know what? Hogan's willing to work with you guys. He jobbed a Billy Kidman, you know, he's willing to do that. So I thought that was kind of cool, but it just ended up being shit. Like you had the Natural Born Thrillers, and some of those guys were kind of cool. And but it was just it ended up being a mess. And they would do shit like, I mean, you had like Medusa won the cruiserweight belt, which that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But
then you also had the Judy Bagwell on a pole match.
You had all these, or the Shane Douglas had the Viagra on a pole match.
Yeah.
So it was just an absolute mess. According to Scoop's notes here, he says, in October 2000, Russo's run as head writer came to a halt after a string of injuries primarily resulting from a match he was in with Goldberg. Why is Vince Russo wrestling? He booked himself as champion.
It was just another week of television,
Another week of television, yeah, bro. He was speared through a cage and his head landed on the ringside barrier. His contract was bought out by Time Warner shortly after the buyout. So it's like, look, if Vince Russo had never been hired, I have no idea what direction WCW would have taken. In the end, this number one thing that we have is the bottom line on why WCW didn't survive. But Vince Russo, it sounds like he came in, he had all of his wacky Vince Russo ideas, some of which I thought were actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
Some of them like outshine the cool ones.
Oh, yeah.
Immeasurably, like David Arquette winning the title, like et cetera,
Russo winning the title.
All the gimmick matches. It was just a bunch of crap, like week to week. Let's get to the next week, as opposed to building something which fans like and they respect. And that's what was happening over in WWF.
Vision.
And number one.
One!
The AOL merger with Time Warner.
Yeah.
This was it. This was in 1996, Time Warner acquired Turner Broadcasting in a huge deal. But then AOL was hot shit. They merged all together.
Yeah.
I was actually listening to this weird, I think, a Forbes podcast with Steve Case from AOL. And he was saying, you know, the merger was a good idea at the time, but we really missed the opportunity of being first to the Netflix type thing, of being first to this, because the merger just added so many levels of management, so many layers. But the bottom line is, when that merger happened, the decision was made by the higher ups. They had no interest in wrestling.
Yep.
You know, WCW's ratings by that point, because of Vince Russo, because of all that shit, were so crappy.
Yep.
And they said, we don't even want this anymore. So I remember this distinctly. The Nitro before the last Nitro, when Vince bought the company, was, I like this. This is interesting. So in the Scoops notes, WCW is not allowed to go as far with their programming. Nash is famously quoted as saying there was a standards and practices person in their booking meetings.
They're hearing that, yeah.
That's insane.
Yep.
I always like
this fact. WCW was given more restrictions on their budget and then told to start a second show, Thunder.
Yeah, I remember hearing that as well. But getting back to my other point, I distinctly remember the Nitro before the last Nitro, when they got Eric Bischoff on the phone to announce into the arena that he had found investors to buy the company, and that the following week would be a contest of a Clash of Champions, a contest of champions, something like that. All the belts were going to be on the line.
Yeah.
And that'd be a new era. And then that week he found out they're not going to give us any TV time.
Yeah.
And the entire deal that he had with the investors hinged on TV time, because without TV time, there's nothing.
Yeah.
There is nothing.
Yeah.
And so that ended up not happening. And then Vince ended up buying WCW for a very, very good price, because he essentially wanted...
He
wanted the tape library. He wanted his competition dead, and he wanted a tape library.
Yep.
I remember Jericho in one of those documentaries said, if I knew how much the WWF bought WCW for, he was like, I would have tried to buy it, because it was that cheap.
Wow.
And I don't remember what Meltzer had. I forget what the stat was, but it was like... $500 or $750 per hour of programming or something like that.
Yeah,
something
ridiculously
cheap.
Didn't you do the math on that?
I did, and it was like hardly anything.
It was like $2 million, right?
It was $2 million, yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me that's how much WWF paid for it. Because all the wrestlers were under contract with Time Warner, not WCW.
Yeah. Scoops brings up a good point here, just in kind of some concluding notes.
Okay.
How badly WCW bungled Bret Hart.
Yes.
Yeah. As soon as the Montreal screw job happened, Bret Hart should have been on the first plane to whatever town Nitro was happening that Monday night.
Yep.
Bring him out immediately.
Yep.
Let him do a promo.
Mm-hmm.
That could have kicked off a whole wave of publicity
for
WCW. They didn't do it. They had him on the sidelines for a month or so, because they had no idea what to do with
him. And his first promo, he looked so dejected.
Yep.
Could you imagine? Yeah, like you said, bring him out to Nitro and just have him spit. Just say, here's a mic. Pipe bomb. Say that you're still their champion. Say that you're bringing the championship lineage over here.
Yep.
You know, it's like you can do all that. And I know Eric Bischoff was saying, well, there's no way we could have had the belt because, like, I'm sure Hart still had a replica of his belt somewhere.
Yeah.
Bring that over. I don't think I think Bischoff said because of trademark problems, they couldn't have done that. But
even without the belt, just have them come out.
I know.
I mean, I'm sure there's some other something else symbolically they can use, like one of his old Hitman t-shirts or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure WWEF owns the copyright on the image. Yeah. There's something that he could have brought with him.
Yeah.
A symbol of his time in WWF mm-hmm. to destroy and say, this is a new era for Hitman, new era for WCW.
Yeah.
Championship lineage. Yeah. Excellence of execution. All that. But yeah. They didn't.
Yeah. Russo does to this day, he says that the ratings, when they were there, when him and Ed Ferrara were there, he says, October 99 through January 2000, look at the numbers. There's no question in my mind, those 3 months were definitely on the right track. Politics kicked in. They decided to go in a different direction, even though the ratings were on the uptick. But it makes me wonder, it was one of those things where there was never any long-term planning. And
it was always week to week, what can we do to pop ratings? Mm-hmm, that was it.
And then there was, of course, the Vince Russo, the Bash of the Beach 2000 thing, where he literally, got rid of essentially Hulk Hogan. And it's like, yes, Hulk Hogan was one of these things that meant the downfall, one of the reasons why WCW didn't survive. But at the same time, Hogan was still the biggest draw in the company, minus maybe like Goldberg, but it's Hulk Hogan. He's like the most known name in wrestling.
Yep.
And to get rid of him in favor of pushing other guys that nobody had ever heard of outside of wrestling, everybody, we all know who Booker T is. We know who all those guys are. But Hulk Hogan is bigger than all of them, as opposed to keeping him around and just trying to chip away, trying to build his trust and trying to, I won't say manipulate, but work with him to try to get, because either you have Hulk Hogan or you don't. You're not going to survive. Like, you're not doing any favors by getting rid of one of the biggest draws in wrestling history.
Yeah.
He can still be booked successfully if you've got a strong strength of vision, like we saw back when he came back to the WWE.
Yep.
So,
although even when he came back to WWE, he wasn't that keen on losing.
Yeah.
The stories of him
and Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know.
This is interesting. According to Time Warner Chief Jeff Bukes.
Yeah.
According to him, the 2001 AOL merger was the biggest mistake in corporate history.
Yeah, and it might have been. I mean, in retrospect, because they didn't, according to Steve Case, because they didn't execute things the way that they should have. I mean, if you think about it, you had all the resources in the world to become, to be at the forefront of Netflix, to be at the mm-hmm. forefront of entertainment,
mm-hmm.
and because of all the cogs in that machine, it didn't allow it to happen.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's the brief rundown of why we feel WCW failed. They all seem pretty obvious, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like all the writing was just on the wall. You could just see it happening in front of you when you were watching back then. Anyways, if you guys have any other ideas as to why WCW was the Titanic of pro wrestling, drop them right there in the comments. Smash that like button. Smash it.
Are we going to start giving away Amazon gift cards?
Amazon gift cards. Free WWE loot crates.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. No, we're not doing that. Not at all. We're not giving anything. But if you guys enjoy
WrestleMania tickets.
WrestleMania front row WrestleMania travel packages. But if you guys enjoy the programming here, these days it's all about the like button in the comments.
Tell them to smash the like button.
Smash that like button. Smash the like button. Sure. That's it for now. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.